Okay, I'm going to go ahead and call this meeting to order at 6:33 p.m. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to address the board regarding any closed session items? Seeing none, we will adjourn to closed session. Okay, we're going to go ahead and begin, everybody. We call this meeting to order at 7 o'clock. Okay, I have a poem for the invocation that ties in line with our strategic planning and the work that we're doing and all the changes. So I have two. And then Miss Hannah will lead us in the flag salute. Okay. Striving for success without hard work is like trying to harvest where you haven't planted. That is by David Bly. And Jean L. Davis says, nature, by example, shows us anything worthwhile comes over time. Anything worthwhile grows methodically, building on a strong foundation. Develop a willingness to carry on despite roadblocks. So I felt that that was apropos for us with all the changes we're doing in our district and taking on. So.
Send me a coffee.
Oh, I'll give it to you.
Place your right hand over your heart. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
This is Fernanda Jimenez.
Here.
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 Here. We are all present and accounted for. Okay, there is no action to report from closed session. We now have a public hearing. The public hearing, we will declare it open at 7:01 p.m. for the purpose of hearing public input on the sufficiency of the 2013-2014 textbook and instructional materials. Okay, I don't think your comment though is about the sufficiency, so we'll wait to just one more moment. Okay. Nobody's commenting. Okay, there being no further comment, the public hearing is hereby declared closed at 7:02 p.m. Okay. For the board president's report, I have to thank and commend the staff. We have had, right, Hannah, amazing study sessions. We started with Ms. Hawkins. She walked us through the strategic plan. And then we had one with Dr. Coghlan, who's walked us through the basics of the budget. And then next Monday, we're going to be doing Common Core. And then we have one more scheduled to talk about LCFF. And then we are not going to leave Mr. Seaman out of the fun. We're going to do one on HR. But they've been very informative, and I have to tell the board that the students have learned quite a bit. It has been very eye-opening. They feel very informed, and they're excited about participating, just not tonight. So that was my report. On Friday, I will be at the district-wide teacher of the year. So I'm looking forward to that. I know that Debbie recently attended a conference, and you had there. Tell us about some of the things LCFF that you learned over there that maybe the public and us should know.
Sure.
What did you learn?
This was the city superintendents. They meet twice a year, and the majority of the sessions were on LCFF and LCAP and the Common Core. Those were the three common themes. I thought what was the most interesting, the two things that I left with to really ponder over, think about is. When they talk about LCFF, this new funding model is the first new model in funding education in California in 40 years. And so they were talking about LCFF the same way we've been talking about the Common Core, that we're ending one era and starting another era. So as people were talking, not only are we changing dramatically what we're doing in our funding model, but we're changing dramatically what we're doing with student achievement. And what crossed over a lot was with the LCFF, you have to have a local plan on how you're going to spend those supplemental funds. And the local plan is to really say how you're going to close the achievement gap for your poverty students or for your EL students, and really holding school districts responsible for giving you these funds and making sure that these funds are closing the achievement gap and having the accountability at the local level, knowing that we're changing all of the assessments right now, and we're not going to have an assessment in place to say we're closing that gap. And probably the first year that we have that assessment, it's not going to show that because it's a different assessment. You can't compare apples to oranges. So there's so much going on that we don't know as we're building this, and I think many of the districts have taken on the same focus that we have, is that we really want to focus on the Common Core and implementing the Common Core, and we're not going to be focusing on the assessment. And now it's pretty sure that we're not even going to be taking the assessment, that we'll be taking either the smarter balance in the language arts or the math, but not both, and we'll not be getting any information. The other common theme for both the Common Core and the LCFF is that in California over the last, I'm going to say 20 years, everything has been mandated, and there's been very little decision-making available at the local level. So, for example, the textbooks, these are the list, and you had to choose from that list, that there were mandates that we had to do. And with both LCFF and with the Common Core, they're putting that decision-making back at the local level and holding the local LEA accountable for those kinds of gains. So it's very interesting that with both of these shifts, they're really changing dramatically the way we're educating kids and the accountability factors. So it's my intent that when I have more information, that we do a board, what do we call it, a discussion night where we just focus on LCFF, because I think there's so many pieces to it. The other piece that really comes out strongly with the LCAP is they want community engagement. So they want us to be talking to all the units, they want us to be talking to parents, but they want community engagement, and you're going to have to really show that there's been community involvement in terms of the plan that you put together. So I think a lot of good stuff, but dramatic changes for the way we do business in California.
Excellent. Thank you so much for that information. I appreciate that. Colleagues, any reports? Mr. Cox? Ms. Poulos?
No.
Shoemaker, okay. You're on, my dear.
Okay. So, Coronado High School. Students and staff are preparing for the monthly credit progress report that allows each student to see where they stand in each class. On Monday, 11 Coronado students volunteered as top soccer coaches/buddies for a group of 5- and 6-year-olds who have either Down syndrome or autism. They did an excellent job during an event that was full of plenty of laughter and smiles. Many of the parents of the kids who have special needs commented that it was the first time ever that their kid was able to have fun in a group without the worry of being judged or made fun of. They will be serving as coaches/buddies for the next 8 weeks. Our model school application was accepted, and we are now waiting to hear about our visitation schedule. Tutoring is available for all students scheduled to take the KAC next week. Our football team lost to Mount Olive 28-21. It was their first loss in 3 years. West Covina High School. West Covina High School is busy as usual. On the academic front, this past Friday was packed full of professional development for teachers. We worked on our WASC critical academic needs and identified how much progress we had made towards the visiting committee recommendations. In the afternoon, all teachers participated in Common Core planning and professional development. Math, history, language arts, and science worked on their assessment and intervention plans, while our other core departments worked on reading and writing strategies. All of this work is aimed at supporting our site Common Core transition plan and the district strategic plan. Preparations for homecoming, October 11th and 12th, are in full swing. Tickets have gone on sale, and our student leadership teams have begun the event planning. The theme this year is New York State of Mind. The push for the annual PTSA Reflections program has begun. We are hoping to increase the number of students participating in the program. Finally, we'd like to thank everyone for supporting West Covina High School's back to school this year. Now, Edgewood. Students are planning on an academic renaissance rally to celebrate the results of the first marking period, which ends Friday, September 27th. The rally will take place on November 1st, and all board members are invited to attend. EHS's new water polo team competed for the first time last week, winning their first game. Cross country continues to blow away the competition. They are happy to report that there is only an 18-second differentiation between their first and fifth place runners. We know they will continue to have a very successful season. Girls volleyball hosted a faculty/student game last week that was well attended and proved that the teachers rule on the court as well in the classroom. On October 8th, EHS will host a celebrity basketball game with Power 106. Mm. Cheer and Swim will join forces to host a dodgeball tournament on October 25th. PTSA hosted a safe driving workshop for students and parents on Thursday, September 19th. PTSA is also having a clothes drive this week. Travel Club is having a walkathon on September 27th to help raise money for their China trip. On October 2nd, there will be a choir concert in the Cafe Theater at 7 o'clock. Yearbook will host a scary movie night on October 4th. Film Club will be celebrating Film Noir on Friday, October 18th from 3:30 to 5:30. Poetry Club is sponsoring a night of poetry on Friday, October 18th. Drama Club has begun selling tickets for Godspell, which will be held in November. Our mock trial team is working with former EHS Trojan Charlie Rossman. Charlie was ASB president while student at Edgewood and is currently a civil attorney and actor. Interact worked with the Sunrise Rotary this month on a project to send packages to our wounded warriors. Several other Interact activities are being planned for this semester, including a Halloween carnival for UNICEF, open mic night for Heifer International, a canned food drive for local food banks. In addition, we are working with Rotary on the Shoes and Socks campaign and the Red Ribbon Week Pancake Breakfast. We are very excited about some second semester projects that are in the planning stages and will look forward to telling you about these in the near future. On Friday, September 27th, our graduation committee will reconvene to begin planning Edgewood's first graduation. The committee consists of administration, teachers, parents, alumni, and students. We are all very excited to be planning this special event.
Thank you very much. I did. I'm sorry. I'm going to thank you. Thank you. You can go. I do have to also compliment Ms. Kaplan and Ms. Hawkins at the back to school night. God, it seems like eons ago at the high school. It was the first time that you've done that. I know it was tough because there were lots of terminology and parents wanted to hurry, but people were actually listening. People were paying attention. So I do want to say thank you for informing our parents so that they're not in the dark and that they're going to be, it really felt like a partnership, like we were functioning as a partnership with them. So I'd like to compliment both of you ladies, and I think I was the largest cheering section there every chance I got.
For presentation at the middle school, at both Edgewood Middle School and Walnut Grove this week.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you. Thank you. And they did a very good job at the back-to-school night. I liked all the paperwork that they passed out to inform the parents. Okay. All righty. We have one blue card. Kodrowski, is that right? Joy Kodrowski. You can come join us here at the podium and speak into the mic so that it can be heard on the recording. Thank you.
Okay. First of all, I'd like to say that I'm grateful that my daughter can attend Edgewood High School. There's a lot of neat activities going on. You just heard a whole list of them. I think it was longer than all the other lists, so we're proud of that. I'm so happy. I wish I could go ahead and just bring all of you a great big plate of nice, warm, delicious brownies with chocolate chips in them. But let's use this for illustration purposes. Let's say, for example, before I made those brownies, I went out in my backyard and I got just one little teaspoonful of dog poop and put that in the mixture and baked those brownies and brought them in. I don't think any of you would want those brownies. Figuratively speaking, this is kind of what happened at Edgewood High School just today. Today, our students are reading the book, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. They're on chapters 11 and 12. And I think all of you received the letter that I had written to the Principal Travatori. In there, I outlined some of the things that I was very concerned about. In this chapter basically walks the students through how a grown man, first of all, coaxed, how he molested on two different occasions, how he raped, how he intimidated, and how he covered up his activities. Basically, an instruction manual for kids that are reading this who've never seen child pornography and what it can do to people, showing them how this can be done. To me, this was very troubling. You might say, well, how would I know what the kids in high school are reading? Well, my daughter talked to me about the first book she read. The first book she read was about a young girl in high school who went to a high school party, and there she was raped. It graphically described the rape and her saying how much pain she was in. She called 911. and the party was ruined, and all the kids at the school hated her and were mean to her for the whole year. And what she got out of that was that I saw a little, like, note she had written about the book, and she said, this book was about how a girl messed up the school party. Mm-hmm. So it's very telling when kids are reading stuff like this. This stuff sticks in their heads. It's pictures that they will see for the rest of their life. And some people will say, this isn't child pornography. This is a book. This is words. But when we read books, we visualize things. For example, if you saw Percy Jackson, the movie, and you read the book, you'd say the book was better. But why? Because you can feel the emotion. You can know what people are thinking. And in that, we know that we visualize things much better from a book than you ever could in a movie. And you remember these things for all of your life. Some of the questions I asked, first of all, I asked the teacher. I talked to her first. That's kind of our first when you go through the steps of things. So when I was at the back-to-school night, I said, well, I see what you guys read for your first book. Is there any more adult content in the other books the kids are going to read? She said, well, yes, actually the next book has some. So I went out and bought that book and started to read it. After I got to chapters 11 and 12, then I went ahead and contacted the teacher and spoke to her about, did you know what this has in here? And we had that discussion. She said, well, you know, kids have already seen all this stuff by the time they're this age anyways. I think sometimes some kids, unfortunately, do stumble on child pornography on the Internet. Sometimes they look for it on their iPhones. But that is always in the context of them sneaking around and hoping no one's watching them. This is not in the context of a classroom with a teacher. What I'd like to say is that for these kids, this is a very formative time. Something that I didn't get a chance to pass out to all of you. I gave a copy to Colleen, so Colleen has this. But I haven't had a chance to show all of you is one of the comments that I had in the letter that I wrote to the principal. Because after I talked to the teacher, I talked to him next. Some of the questions that I asked, I know this book has been approved by the state. I realize it's been approved even, by the board, so it can be in the district. But what people, sometimes when people review things, we're all so busy. We don't get a chance to read every word. We don't get a chance to look at all the details, and sometimes we don't even ask the right questions. Some of the questions that I have when I looked at this book is, why is the school mandating that teenagers read a book that graphically describes how to molest and rape a little girl? How do you think young ladies will feel reading this book if they themselves were raped or molested, and they're in a class setting surrounded by people? How do you think young men who are just now experiencing the full impact of puberty are going to fully be able to process this information when they are not yet cognitively fully developed? Because we know that people don't develop cognitively fully until the mid-20s, and I have an article on that I'll pass around as soon as I'm done talking. So this is not just stuff that I'm making up. These are real concerns. Since Edgewood High School is a joint middle school-high school campus, how can we justify exposing young men to graphic child pornography when they are in such close proximity to so many younger girls? And then, if only one little girl who's a little sister or just a little girl in the neighborhood is hurt or raped because of this, can we still justify mandating the reading of this book? Those are the questions that I asked. And at this point in time, the book had not yet, we haven't started reading the book. But the book had been picked up from the library. So with that, they decided to read the book, and even after repeated requests that they maybe delay the book. I know there's concerns, because once you have a full body approve something, people feel that if we stop reading it, that might violate a policy, that might be considered censorship by some people, and I know that the policy is an issue. But I hope that our priority is safety, because unfortunately, when kids learn behaviors, sometimes kids act on them. And sometimes people get hurt. I have neighbors on either side of me. Both of them have little girls. I live two blocks from the school. Excuse me. This makes me uncomfortable. People are learning how to molest little children at our school. It's like I thought Lescovina had enough child molesters here. People always go up in arms, like, not next to my house, not next to my school. But our school is actually teaching them how to do this. Not intentionally. No one intentionally teaches a kid how to do this, I don't think. But by giving them this material and exposing them at this early age, will have a negative impact on them, possibly for the rest of their life. After today, those children reading that, we don't know who those kids down the road may someday victimize. And once they victimize, who they will victimize. So this is a continuing process. We know that pornography often leads to addiction, and that addiction leads to disruptive and harmful behaviors, and that people that are hurt often hurt other people's, either in their, and usually when these people get hurt by this, usually it's someone they know, someone they're acquainted with. I see from what we have said and what our superintendent, Mrs. Kaplan, has explained is that we are now at a point in time where we are looking at Common Core and we're evaluating it. I see this as a great opportunity for us to seriously look at the reading material. There is a good reason why in your video store there's an adult section, why movies are rated R and X, why child pornography is illegal, because it's harmful. Some material, while it might be true, is just not age appropriate. And I hope that as we look at the Common Core and reevaluate the reading material, that we will carefully see what is appropriate for our children to read at this age and what is not appropriate. And that just because other schools might be doing it or it might have been approved for a long time, we won't be on that bridge when everybody else jumps off, jump off with them. But we'll stand firm and select only the best material for the people at Edgewood High School and all the rest of the schools in our district. So my request that I gave to the principal was about one book. But I hope that this will be something that we'll look at on a broader basis, that we'll look at all the reading material and seriously consider the safety of our community and the minds that we're educating. Thank you for your time. I'm going to give you a piece of paper here.
Thank you, Ms. Kedrowski. There wasn't a line, so I let you go over.
Okay. I could have given you the words for this copyrighted, so I couldn't photocopy it, but the pages are available in the letter that I gave you. Mm-hmm. And there's more stuff in the book, but I didn't get to that when I wrote the letter. There's two more things that happened that are inappropriate.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Kaplan, do you want to tell us what steps are being taken right now and where we're at in the process?
Well, as you know, we have a board policy when either a parent or a community member has a concern about any instruction materials that we're using. We immediately convene a panel here, and the panel would read the book and then respond to the issues and concerns expressed here tonight. Our policy is very specific that we don't remove any materials while we go through that process, that the materials stay. And just for you to know, in terms of the process, this book was read by the department chair and the English department, so it was not something that wasn't read before. I'm not going to go on one side or the other, but it was vetted, I guess, I want to say, by the English department. Ms. Hopkins, do you have a timeline in terms of this process right now?
Initial meeting on October 2nd, and then we have a final meeting on October 30th. That would give the panel members ample time to read and research and understand the book and its entirety.
The other issues, I think, that you bring up,
and
that
still
I
get
think
you
is really important
letter.
For us to review some of our other policies is when we do have, I gave you a policy tonight of controversial material, but I'm not clear about the process we've used in the past, because we're all new, virtually, in terms of sharing with parents the materials that we're using. You'd mentioned putting them on the website, having an opportunity at back-to-school night to have the materials out for parents to look at. I'm not clear of the process that we've used in the past, but I would like us to review our policies going forward. I think you make a really good point about Common Core. And I think we just need to really look at what the processes are for that. But I think that we're doing what we need to do according to the board policy, and that we will have a quick response to this particular material.
I would like the board policy to be looked at. It hasn't been updated since 91, and I would really like the board policy to address parents' concerns and how parents are alerted to controversial material in books. I know as soon as I got your letter, I warned my sister that her daughter may be reading that book and be prepared and come to decisions before she's in 10th grade. So I appreciate you writing that letter, and if we can, and coming tonight, thank you so much. But if we can address those issues, and if Mr. Spence had the idea of putting all the books up that for the different classes, and then if there's a way to say on there, if there's controversial information, that the parents can look at that and make that decision quickly. And
I totally agree with you. There's several policies. We have the instructional materials policy, we have the controversial materials policy, and we have the complaint policy. So I think we need to look at all three of them together and make sure that they say the kinds of things that you're asking for.
I would concur with what Ms. Cipolla said, and I did talk to you about that. We should, and I have always thought that we should have the course outlines and the books and stuff online so that people can review that ahead of time. Now, with CDE-approved books, they don't normally go through our curriculum committees, right, for approval or anything like that normally? Right, because I know on our curriculum committees, I mean, we had a discussion on our curriculum committees. We do have parents that are supposed to be on our curriculum committees. And so this would be an area where parents didn't have a chance to have input into it. Right, because it was approved by the California Department of Education first. So it wouldn't have gone through our normal curriculum process.
Exactly.
Right, so I mean, so I think that's another thing that has to be looked at, is because we placed, as a board, placed parents on our curriculum committee to make sure that parents had input into these kinds of issues. And if they're approved by CDE, and my understanding is CDE just came out with a whole new list of books, you know, for use in the classroom and stuff too. And so that is something, you know, it seems like, you know, now hearing this and the CDE component, that got around our normal curriculum process, that have parents that have input into it. And so that's one part that I'd like to see us look at too, to make sure that parents had input into it. Because, you know, we also have a video policy, or television policy, or media policy, or whatever, where we won't show PG-13, R, or NC-17 films, period, unless there's been parental permission granted by parents, and it's explained how it relates to the curriculum. And, you know, it seems to me that some of the things brought up, if it was in a movie form, we definitely wouldn't show in the classroom. And, you know, I think, so we need to look at, I think, that component as well. That review. That's what I'm saying, because this board, I mean, we did reject one book over at Edgewood already, you know, The Motorcycle Diaries, Che Guevara, to teach Spanish. And so, I mean, you know, there's other materials to teach things. I'm concerned in the sense, too, I mean, if there's a victim in that classroom that's hearing the story, I mean, I think that is very, that would be very hurtful to somebody. I don't know, you know, I think that would be very hurtful to someone who was a victim that was in that classroom at a young age. And so I'm not sure what, you know, that's why I want to make sure it goes through the curriculum committees as well, those kinds of things.
Ms. Poulos.
And one of the suggestions I had given to Ms. Kaplan, because that was one of the first things that hit me, is that there needs to be a list given out with that if that book is going to remain, that there's counselors available for students, that this is where, you know, rape crisis hotlines, whatever there's out there, because dealing with a young person who has been sexually traumatized, it's very repressed, and oftentimes they don't have the therapy they need, and for it to come out in a classroom situation without the helps there. So if we're prepared to pass those out, and the students at that time can pass out that information to their friends, if you know, or they'll know where it's available. That doesn't mean I'm advocating for this book to stay on, but if it does stay on, that those things need to be put into place.
That is in our AR that I had to do out.
Yeah.
That is in the AR. We just need to make sure we are following up.
Following. And I know we're not supposed to dialogue, but did your student get something like that along with the book?
I had my student for today, since they wrote these chapters, go to the library, and she stayed in the library. She will not be tested on the material. But the reason this book was selected was supposed to be for all the good things. And I have a list hundreds of books long that other schools look at and choose, and I'm happy to share that with Pauline and Ms. Kaplan and everyone else too, so they can see what there's a lot of choices, and even this author has a lot of good poetry. We don't need to pick things that are child pornography or that age inappropriate.
Okay, I thank you for explaining the process and what we're going through. I look forward to it, because I do agree that there are some books that can be controversial. But on the flip side, too, I think we're also forgetting that in addition to people maybe feeling victimized or reliving it, it also gives voice to people. And I know plenty of people who, after reading something that may appear very controversial to us, felt like they had a voice, that what their experience that they was going through was finally brought to light, and they were empowered by that. So I understand we have to tread lines. We, as parents, we want to look out for our kids. I know I do it all the time with my kids. So I look forward to the process and what comes of it.
You know, if I could say just one more thing, I mean, there was recently a study
I'm gonna go after you then.
That came out that said, you know, all the anti-bullying curricula that's done in schools has actually increased the number. Schools that have more anti-bullying curriculum and programs have more bullying than schools that don't have it. And so, you know, it becomes a fine line on, you know, every time we teach something people didn't know or, you know, things like that. I mean, people seem to pick it up. You know, that is, you know, that was part of the issue with drug education stuff, too, for earlier, really early ages, was, you know, if people weren't exposed to it, then, you know, we were exposing them to things that they never had knew about. And so, but, I mean, that study just came out about bullying materials. The more anti-bullying programs we have, the more bullying there is on campus. And so, you know, we have to be careful in what we actually, you know, we have a responsibility. So, the more parents know and parents are involved in the process, I think that curricula component we have to look at.
All right, thank you very much.
You can go. Well, no, we told her that she should probably stay because it was about Edgewood.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
She, since she represents.
She represents Edgewood. She's the ASB president.
She needs to hear
ASB president over there.
And she's representing all the schools, and if this is an issue, then you can have that.
Okay, we are going to move on to the business session of our meeting. I'm sorry. Okay. Anybody like to add or remove items to consent? Okay.
I'll move to approve.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved to approve the agenda and consent items for the regular meeting of September 24th, 2013. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Okay. Okay, we are on to item number 4. Okay, I'm going to start to my left here. BPAR 3580. Any comment, Mr. Cox? Ms. Poulos? We have a long list, everybody, so be patient. Mr. Spence? Ms. Shoemaker? No. Okay. E4112.9, employee notifications. Mr. Cox? Ms. Poulos?
Yes.
Mr. Spence? Yes. Okay, what page?
Well, it's the whole page, because I think it was missed because there's no education or legal code that pertains to it, but we do have a board policy about informing all employees about their rights concerning whether or not they're part of a bargaining unit.
Mm-hmm.
Correct?
Yes.
And so that should be one of the notifications that's listed on this sheet. And instead, of course, there's no education or either code, but it should be a board policy or AR.
Okay.
That was my only comment.
Okay.
On that one. I remember we had to rework the actual notification requirement, but it needs to be into
okay,
H.
Okay. Do you remember the code or no?
It wasn't a code. It was a board policy.
It was
you remember that, Mr. Simmons?
I don't remember the number. I remember the conversation, and I remember discussing that. I can find the policy, and I can add it in here and reference it.
Yeah.
Okay. Ms. Shoemaker, any comment on E4112.9? Okay. AR4117.14, Mr. Cox?
No.
Ms. Poulos?
No.
Mr. Spence?
No.
Ms. Shoemaker?
The only one I have a comment on is the last one.
You only have a comment on the last one?
Yes, the BP5145.
Okay. Then I, okay. Next one, let's see, AR4154, Mr. Cox, Ms. Poulos?
I have something on it.
Okay.
And that's a question on page 4S.
4S.
How does the change in these definitions change who we grant benefits to, and why are we doing that?
It doesn't change who we grant benefits to, but adding the paragraph and the change in the second to last paragraph and adding the last paragraph actually allows us to eliminate AR 4154.1, which only referred to vision. Mm-hmm. Our contract under the vision policy refers to employees having to be full-time rather than get prorated benefits, where all of our other medical and dental and life can be prorated. So by adding the paragraph definition of eligible classified employees for a vision plan is different than eligible classified employees for medical, dental, and life, then that allows us to eliminate AR 4154.1. It doesn't change anything that we currently are doing. It just condenses it down into one AR rather than two ARs.
Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Shoemaker? No. Oh, you said you're, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. It's the last one. BP 5116. Nope. Okay. 5116.1.
Wait. Nope. So yeah.
Yes.
No.
Okay. BPAR 5117.
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Cox, Ms. Poulos. No. Okay, Mr. Spence, go ahead.
Okay, and I had a conversation with Mr. Siemens about this 4EE, especially if you look in the way the board policy is worded. I don't think it's completely clear that they'll issue the permits because it says it shall be the duty of the office principals to issue or renew all inter-district and renew from the middle attendance permits for students residing in the Western Unified Attendance Area and applying to attend the district. Upon request and in accordance with board policy and administrative regs, students will be allowed to transfer out of the Western Union School District. But if you go back to, other than this application part down below, the board policy, to me, it wasn't clear that they would be granted because it sounds like it's contradicting the part in the board policy where it says they'd be granted. So I think if we just take out the upon request and in accordance with board policy administrative regs, because that's redundant to the policy down below, it would make it clear they would be released.
Okay, so take out upon request and just begin with in accordance with board policy?
No, just that whole line, right?
Did you want to leave upon request? That matches what's on page 4BB.
Well, what part was it what we talked about?
We were going to take out after request. So from and to regulation was going to be struck.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So upon request, students will be allowed to transfer out of West Covina Unified School District.
Right.
We still need them to request it.
Right.
Because we still have some agreements and things.
But it was confusing with the accordance with board policy and the regulation because the board policy says it's going to be released.
It appears there would be reasons they'd
have
to
look
at and things. So.
Right. So I wanted to delete that part to make it consistent with the board policy.
Okay. So it's upon request.
Students
will
be
allowed.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then it says procedures for applying, and that's down below. And that's the request part.
Currently, our procedures is they need to go through their school site to get a recommendation, then come to the pupil services office and get approval. We've eliminated the recommendation piece. It's not necessary. Come here, present it to us, sign off. You're released.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
Are the schools clear on our board policy that they are to release
them? I believe they are. I don't know if they've made mistakes or not. I usually find out about them, and then we release them. But once this is approved, we'll communicate that to them, and the form will be changed to all as well.
Okay.
Simplify it for parents.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, BPAR 5119, students expelled from other districts. Mr. Cox, Ms. Poulos? Nope. Okay.
I'm just dying to hear.
AR 5132, dress and grooming standards. Mr. Cox, suppose.
It's not about the policy itself. I just want to make sure that the principals are aware of the opt-out policy and what that means. And I had already spoken to Ms. Kaplan about that. So,
what we do every time the board approves these new policies, at a principal's meeting, we go over them, and if there's anything specifically that we want to make clear, we do this, so we will.
Okay.
You know, and just to comment, if you read our policy on the dress and grooming standards, we would not allow quotes from Maya Angelou's book to be on a
Depends
on a
what quote it was.
If it was from Chapter 11,
no
quotes. Chapter 12, based on the regulations and requirements in here.
It's an excellent book. I read it in ninth grade.
I didn't say it was an excellent
book.
Excellent book. Based on this policy, it would not be allowed.
Depends
on
what quote you pick up.
That's what I said.
No quotes.
Okay. I know. I'm teasing him. Okay, AR 5141.4, Child Abuse and Neglect Reporting Procedures. Mr. Cox, Ms. Pelosi, Mr. Spence. We are to BPA AR 5145.11. Mr. Cox, Ms. Pelosi, Mr. Spence, Ms. Shoemaker, the floor is yours. What page?
Before V.
V as in Victor? Okay.
And I realize the language is of our existing policy. It is the first, second, third, fourth paragraph. It says, at the law officer's discretion, with the student's approval, the principal or designee may be present during the interview. The law officer should advise the student that he, she has the right to remain silent, but that he, she is encouraged to cooperate with law enforcement agencies. I would like that last sentence to end with, the law officer should advise the student that he, she has the right to remain silent. Because I feel that in certain situations when a student is being questioned by a police officer and they're told they have the right to remain silent but then are encouraged to cooperate with law enforcement agencies, they may not have the understanding that it's not in their best interest that they should remain silent, and we could be accused, with, especially if a principal is present, of undue influence on that student. And so I would prefer to not have any part of our policy saying that we're encouraging them to cooperate with law enforcement agencies. Obviously, that would be my hope that they would, but.
Well, I have a different question on that, which is how would we enforce our board policy on law enforcement officers?
Well, there is that, but.
You know.
But
I
it's
mean,
not our policy.
Huh?
Oh, but if it's not in our policy, we really don't have any control.
That's what I'm saying, is that, you know, once a law enforcement officer is in there, it's not like, you know, I guess the question would be, you know, the whole section of that part. You know, because I don't think, you know, we have control whether they, whatever they do, right? I mean, how would we enforce it?
You have any comments, Mr. Seaman?
I don't have any comments, no.
I mean, I'm just being realistic. I mean, you know, they're not our employee, right?
No, you're right. Usually when they're doing an investigation, we rely on them taking
they
over
tell
the
us what
yeah.
Dr. Copeland, do you have a comment?
Maybe it's more that the principal advises the student that they have a right to remain silent.
I was
silent.
Just going to suggest that.
No.
I was going to suggest
that
they cooperate.
No, that's not what this says, and I would not expect the principal to know every nuance of when somebody needs to be advised of their rights. And
but
when they don't.
But could the principal encourage the student to cooperate, and then the officer, at that point, we have no control over an officer?
I think if it's the policy, it should just be the first sentence and take out the second one. We don't have that. When the law officers are there, they're usually there to take over some kind of investigation.
Because we're not training our principals on how to, you know.
Oh, okay.
I think the issue here is that our principals know that they, and the student know that they have a right to have the principal in. I think that's what we want to highlight here, that
right.
That's okay.
So
okay, so and just the
removing the whole second sentence.
The whole second sentence, yeah. Okay, I'm fine with that too.
And that's our responsibility.
Yeah, okay.
And I wouldn't also be opposed to adding a line there that says, you know, if the principal or designee is present during the interview, they're there in an observatory role only. Meaning not interacting with the student, advising them that they should cooperate, just watching, being present.
I don't know, because they're minors, and I like the idea that they could be an advocate or,
well,
you know.
The parent in absentia.
Right, so.
But if they advise them something that is against the student's best interests, where
you know, it already says in there that the superintendent or designee shall collaborate with local law enforcement agencies to establish procedures.
I'd like to hear from a principal. We have one in the room.
Judge. Typically, when something like this happens, I've already done my investigation, so I have a lot of knowledge of what happens. But when I'm in there, so I always ask a student when they're going to be questioned by an officer, do you want me in the room with you? And if they do, I usually just sit and observe what's going on so that nothing is said later that wasn't said in that room.
Yeah. I don't want to necessarily mandate, you know, what. You know, because the police officer, what if he asks him, well, don't you have some information or something like that? I mean, I just don't want to, I just don't think it's, it makes sense.
Well, I would expect that the officer talks to the principal either before or after to get, I mean, even before they question the students as to what information they have.
Yeah, but you don't, you know, he may say, what was the guy's name or something? I mean, you don't know what they're going to say anything, so.
Okay.
You don't know every situation.
So do we need to write it into the policy or no? We have the benefit of a principal in the room. Who probably?
It says that. At the law enforcement's discretion with the student's approval.
Right.
The principal or designee may be present during the interview.
Right, but Ms. Shoemaker was saying that we should add to the policy that they should be there in an observatory role. So that was the part that we were going back and forth on right now. We all took out that second sentence.
Right.
And we ended it there.
Provide training for every principal on how they're going to act in every situation.
I think the situations can be different every time, and the role may change depending on the situation. I think I agree that it should be left to discretion.
End the period there. Okay. I'm fine with that. Any other comment? Thank you, Ms. Shoemaker. Thank you. Okay.
If I can comment before you move on.
Sure.
Page
Mr. Seaman.
4, sorry, SS. It's a different policy, but it does deal with questioning of a student, and it does actually list out the staff member's role. I don't know if that's where we're going with this.
That's under
child abuse and neglect.
Right?
It is, but it says if the selected person, and this is a staff member volunteer aid selected by a child. It's right in the middle of the page.
Okay, so if we wanted to move that to the
if the selected person accepts, the principal or designee shall inform him or her before the interview takes place the following legal requirements. The purpose of them being there, they're not to participate in the interview, shall not discuss the facts afterwards. Select person is subject to confidentiality.
See, that's absolutely not true. I mean, we would do that in a child abuse neglect, but we wouldn't do that. I mean, they have to discuss that stuff when they come to us for expulsion and all that kind of stuff. I mean, so I don't think it applies because there's different provisions in here for child abuse and neglecting that would not apply to
drug possession.
Case of someone that had a terrorist threat.
Or cigarettes. Or
yeah, but just saying the selected person shall not participate in the interview goes back to, obviously they can question before and after, but when they are sitting with a law enforcement officer, they are just there to observe. Not to sit there next to the officer and have a principal and an officer necessarily questioning at the same time.
I think that limits. I mean, we have the law enforcement officer in there, and we're supposed to cooperate with them. So I don't know if we put a, you know, I guess it depends on what the word observe means. You know, if he asks a clarifying question, or says, well, don't we already have 3 people or whatever? I mean, I don't see why the principal couldn't answer that.
Yeah,
I think every circumstance is different.
Different.
And try to prescribe what the principal is going to do in there, I think, is difficult. That's why I have a problem with.
And has it been
there.
A problem? Mr. Seaman, you've been here. No. So I think people are using their discretion.
Well, and I haven't heard of any problems when any of our staff sit in on interviews of any issues with police or the parents or anyone else. So I think what we're doing is working. It may just need to be struck through that last sentence and we're okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and just strike that last sentence.
I just want to say on SS, we were supposed to change this and didn't. It's supposed to be a release of a child to a police officer and take out peace officer. We want to be consistent.
Okay.
Go back to changing.
So we'll go back and change that. On 4SS, where, Ms. Kaplan?
Where it says,
the
last
sentence.
Police officer.
Trying to have the same words.
Well, should it be police officer that's consistent or peace officer that's consistent? Because the peace officer is more than it.
What is the police officer?
You know, because actually it's defined like further, like on, if you look at the questioning thing on 4YY, you know, it talks about release, removed from the school of custody to police officer, officer of juvenile court, or other authorized law enforcement official.
For first, how about for second reading, I'll go through and make sure it's consistent and show any changes.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying? Because it says, you know, custody of police officer, officer of juvenile court, or authorized law enforcement official.
And that's good.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Well, I think it covers everybody, I guess.
Covers everyone.
We'll go through.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. Good discussion, everyone. Okay, who will move this?
I'll move it.
Make the changes.
I'll second it for first reading.
Okay, good night.
And okay, it has been moved by Jessica Shoemaker and seconded by Cami Poulos, with the changes made and to be accepted for first reading. Okay, to accept for first reading the following board policies, administrative regulations, and exhibit as presented with changes. With all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Okay. Information report. I'm going to turn this over to the superintendent, item number 5.
Well, I made the changes to my goals as from what I heard from last meeting. I sent you a copy. I have not heard, the only one I heard back from was Mr. Smith saying he agreed with them.
Oh, no, I was fine with them.
I'm doing my job.
Well, I thought we were only supposed to respond if we had a problem.
That's true.
I did not hear from you, so I don't know if,
if there is, yes. I liked how you revised number 3. That was a good revision to the discussion we were having. So I was fine with it. Mr. Cox? Ms. Poulos?
I felt heard.
I did my job. The only thing after what I heard yesterday with LCFF and these parent meetings, I think those meetings are going to be probably more focused on engagement with LCFF. Just based, because it needs to be done. So that problem, I didn't change the wording, but that's how I was focused.
Okay, it was just informational, so there's no votes.
The only minor comment I have on this is that we got it in our board packet, but I'm not quite sure why it wasn't part of the public packet so that community could have seen what we were adopting as goals. Because we are supposed to discuss it publicly, so.
I can put it on the website.
Yeah, I just thought that would be a good thing, especially since it was available to us when the packet went out.
Why don't you tweet one a day?
Yes.
I will thank you.
And it would also be what you've done to reach that goal today.
Each day?
Measurement. Measurement.
And you don't want me to blog. And you don't want me to blog.
No, no blogging. No blogging. We struck that.
I do think you should. Are you supposed to adopt them? I guess as long as you agree.
Okay. No, it's only on here as an information.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I don't think you have to. As long as you agree.
Yeah. Item number 9.
I'll go ahead and move it.
Proclamation declaring sufficiency of instructional materials. Moved by Mr. Mike Spence, who will second it.
I will, especially since we didn't hear anybody with any concerns.
It's been moved by Mr. Mike Spence and seconded by Cami Poulos to adopt the resolution attesting that all pupils in the district have sufficient textbooks or instructional materials for the 2013-14 school year. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Okay, it's carried. All righty. Is there any discussion, colleagues?
Well, I didn't pull it off of consent, but the healthy...
Harvest of the month?
Harvest of the month. I was just surprised that there were a number of principals, I guess, that did not strongly agree to apply for grant
right.
money to fund the programs. It was just simply agree. It just seemed kind of odd.
That was funny.
Kind of weird to me.
Yes. I'm glad that we're going to carry on the program. Thank you very much. I'm glad we're going to do that. And then thank you for the fees, the memo with the fees. Thank you for handling that. Dr. Coghlan's been working very diligently on handling that. Thank you. Any other board discussion?
And are we going? I would like to have an update in our packet on how many parents turned in requests for fee reimbursements and to have an idea.
Oh, that's a letter.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, our dates to remember, October 8th, Board of Education meeting. I will go ahead and adjourn this meeting at 7:54 p.m.
Thank you. Bye.